Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
The Pharisees, you know, they were what we would call legalists. And a legalist is a person who adds to God's commands things that God hasn't commanded. And Jesus is going to deal with this. And at one point, he's going to tell them that what they've done is they've taken the commandments of men and they've elevated them to the same level as the commandments of God.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of Luke. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on Luke chapter 6. Now here's Pastor Brian.
So here we are in our journey through the New Testament in Luke chapter 6. And so Jesus is ministering in the area around the Sea of Galilee, and many people are coming to him. And so as we pick up, we read, one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. So just something that seems innocent enough, just snapping off a piece of wheat and using your hands to thresh it, sort of, and then chewing on it. But some of the Pharisees asked, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? Now, they're in a grain field. You have to wonder, what are the Pharisees like spying? Are they, you know, behind trees or rocks or, you know, I mean, maybe they're sort of tagging along behind the group. But whatever the case is, they're watching Jesus. And so they accuse his followers of violating the Sabbath law. Now, the Sabbath law is very simple. You shall do no work on the Sabbath day. That's the Sabbath law. And you find it given to us in a variety of places in the writings of Moses. And, you know, once in a while there will be some addition about maybe something like you're not to harvest your field on the Sabbath day and so forth. Basically, you're not to go out to work on the Sabbath day. It was a day of rest. It was a blessing. He was giving rest to the people. You know, some people have a tendency to work themselves to death. And so the Lord has built into the law this day where, no, you have to take a break. Now, the Pharisees, remember, we've talked about them before. They were a group who originated in the intertestamental period. And they were so committed to the law. They wanted to make sure that Israel never again did what they had done before they were led into captivity. So they were led into captivity because of their violations of the law. They were led into captivity because of their idolatry and so forth. So this group of men rise up, and they are determined, this is not going to happen again, and we're going to make sure it doesn't happen. And so we're going to really take the law seriously, and we're going to study it, and we're going to learn it, and we're going to teach everybody what it is to really obey the commands. And over time, so it started out with a relatively pure motive. But as time went on, what they began to do is they began to add little things here and there to the law. So, for example, the Sabbath is a great example of this. So the Sabbath is just that one sentence, you shall do no work on the Sabbath day. They ended up creating 39 volumes on what it was to do no work on the Sabbath day. And they just, over a period of time, they came up with just unimaginable things that they began to interpret as work on the Sabbath day. And here's a good example of it. That right here in the first two stories in this sixth chapter, both of these incidents that occur, Jesus is accused of violating the Sabbath. But as we're going to see, as you look at it, Jesus didn't violate the Sabbath at all. But he violated the Sabbath according to their interpretation of it. And so the Pharisees, you know, they were what we would call legalist. And a legalist is a person who adds to God's commands things that God hasn't commanded. And Jesus is going to deal with this all the way throughout his ministry with them. And at one point, he's going to tell them that what they've done is they've taken the commandments of men and they've elevated them to the same level as the commandments of God. And so this is an example of that here. Now, in the time of Jesus, this law, it was called the tradition of the elders. So at the time of Jesus, it was pretty much an oral law. But again, they were teaching that God gave Moses the oral law as well as the written law. And the oral law was their interpretation of the written law. But as time went on again, the oral law even superseded the written law. And Jesus calls them on that as well. We'll see that as we go through the Gospels. On one occasion, Jesus says to them, "Why do you break the command of God in order to keep the tradition of your fathers? Because the law said, honor your father and mother, but you say, if a man says, what I was obligated to give my parents, I'm going to give to the Lord, then that frees me from having to take care of my parents like the law commands." And so Jesus, this is the example Jesus gives where they're elevating their oral law above the written law. They're violating the written law and justifying it by saying, oh, but we're keeping this higher law. And, you know, this is not something that is exclusively a problem with the Jews, nor is it a problem that existed back then. This is a problem from generation to generation in the church. In the church, what has happened so many times, over and over and over again, is that church tradition creeps in and subtly becomes the focus of everything. And so now it's all about making sure you keep those traditions. And so there's wisdom in all of these stories for us today as well. So why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? They asked, and Jesus answered, "Have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions." So Jesus points them back to an incident that happened in the life of David, as we see here. And you can read this story in the 21st chapter of 1 Samuel if you'd like to look at it later. But David is, he's the anointed king, but yet he's having to flee for his life because Saul is out to destroy him. So David goes to the city of Nob, and this is a city where the priests were. And he goes in and he meets with the priest Abimelech. And David asks Abimelech if he has any food for him and his men. And Abimelech says, no, we really don't have much, but we do have the bread of presence. So in the tabernacle, there was the table of what was called the showbread, or the bread of presence. So there was a table of this bread. This bread was baked every Sabbath day, and it was 12 loaves that represented the tribes of Israel, and it sat in the holy place, not in the most holy place. It sat there as a symbol of the people's fellowship with God. And so it was sacred, and then every Sabbath day it would be replaced, and the bread that was from the previous week would then be given to the priest, and the priest would eat it. And so normally it would not be for consumption by just anyone. It was designated for the priest. But on this occasion, the priest says, this is what we have. And David says, okay, that'll be sufficient. Now, a couple things to keep in mind. Number one, David is God's anointed. David is in the service of the Lord. And even though technically this bread was reserved for the priest, here we see a situation where there's an exception to that rule. And the exception is, here's God's servant on a mission, doing the Lord's work, and he has a need, him and his men have a need, and so there's no violation for him to partake of it. And the priest Abimelech, he said, okay, you know, you can partake as long as, you know, there were certain things, you know, need to make sure you're clean, and, you know, he gave a few things there. And David says, okay, yeah, that's fine. So Jesus is pointing back to this incident. Now, remember, David was being rejected and hunted by Saul, even though he was the anointed king. What is Jesus here? He is in the same kind of a situation. He's being rejected, and there's hostility coming from the leaders of the nation, but he is God's servant. As some have pointed out as well, and I think this is an interesting point. I don't know if we could press it too hard, but Jesus was a priest as well. But he wasn't a Levitical priest. According to Psalm 110, he was a priest after another order, after the order of Melchizedek. And so his disciples, Jesus would be, and the letter to the Hebrews, when you get into the 5th and the 6th and the 7th chapter, it goes deep into this person, Melchizedek, who is a type of Christ. So we could see maybe some sort of glimpse of that going on here. But then Jesus, he says one other thing, and listen to what he said. Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. So this kind of trumps everything. Basically, now, remember this. Oftentimes the question is asked about this term, the Son of Man. Jesus uses this term regarding himself more than any other term, even more than the Son of God. He uses the Son of Man. And often people have wondered, well, why did Jesus call himself the Son of Man? And the main reason, it's interesting that today, scholars today, and I think they're right, this has always been the case, but it seems like modern scholarship has caught up with this. What they're recognizing is that Jesus, in using this title, the Son of Man, he is pointing to Daniel chapter 7, where in Daniel chapter 7, you have the Ancient of Days seated upon the throne. Daniel has a vision. He has a heavenly vision. He sees the Lord seated upon the throne. the Ancient of Days he's referred to. And then one like the Son of Man is brought before him, and to him all the nations and all the tribes and all the people are going to worship and serve him forever. His kingdom is going to be an everlasting kingdom. So when Jesus says Son of Man, he's identifying himself with that figure in Daniel chapter 7. And so the recognition would be that the Son of Man is, you know, he's the Savior. He's the Messiah. And Jesus says the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. So to be Lord of the Sabbath, you can only draw one conclusion. He's claiming to be the Lord. So, you know, it's almost like Jesus said, you know, look, I'm kind of like, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath, you know, I'm the one who set this thing up, so it's okay. You know, these guys are all right. They're not really, it's not a problem. It was a problem for the Pharisees, but it wasn't a problem for the Lord. Now, on another Sabbath, so here we go, on another Sabbath, he went into the synagogue and was teaching, and a man was there whose right hand was shriveled. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal on the Sabbath. So, you know, you got to think about, wow, these guys, you know, what kind of a hardened heart would you have to try to entrap Jesus for doing something good for a person? But they're in the synagogue. The synagogues were relatively smaller than this room. And the people would be seated on the sides and across the back. And occasionally they would be in the center. But the head of the synagogue, the teacher, the speaker, they would have sort of been in the middle, you know, speaking. And Jesus is there in the synagogue. And these guys, they see this man with a withered hand. Maybe he had a stroke or something. Who knows? We don't know. But he couldn't use his hand. And they are in their own minds, they're probably talking, hey, look at that guy. Watch him. I bet he's going to do something here. So they knew already that this was kind of a setup. And so they're watching to see what Jesus is going to do and if he would heal on the Sabbath. Now, Jesus knew what they were thinking, and he said to the man with the shriveled hand, get up and stand here in front of everyone. And so he got up and he stood there. And Jesus said to them, I ask you, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy? So, you know, this is one of those questions. How do you even answer this question? This is the wisdom of Jesus as he asks this question. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or evil? Well, is it ever lawful to do evil? No. Is it ever unlawful to do good? Doesn't seem like it would be, right? Is it ever unlawful to heal somebody? Would that be somehow against the law? So Jesus poses these questions. Now, just so you know, again, in the rabbinical mind, they had, in these laws around the Sabbath, they had laws pertaining to healing. And what they had said was that they would allow on the Sabbath day for you to administer medical attention to a person to prevent them from dying, but only that. So if the person's life was in danger, if you had the ability to stop, you know, at that time, I mean, you know, maybe they had cut themselves or something, maybe they were bleeding out or something, maybe whatever the case might be, if you could administer in such a way as to stop it, that was allowed. but you couldn't do anything on the Sabbath to promote healing. All you could do was stop it. So this is the kind of craziness that has developed in the minds of these religious fanatics. That's what they are. So they're, you know, as often is the case with fanatics, they lose their ability to be rational. And that's what we have here with them. Now, it's interesting, though, because Jesus, all he really does here, he looked around at them and he said to the man, he said, stretch out your hand. So, I mean, there's no command against telling somebody to stretch out their hand. So even though they, in their minds, they would have had Jesus violating the Sabbath, he was not doing anything of the sort. And just so we know, whenever we find these accusations of Jesus violating the Sabbath, he's not violating the Sabbath that God gave. He's not violating anything that Moses had laid down in Scripture, but he is intentionally, I think, violating their additions to it or their interpretations of it to show that their words were not equal in authority with God's written word. And so stretch out your hand. He did so, and his hand was completely restored. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were furious. Man, how'd you like to go to a church with people like that leading the church? You know, this, again, I mean, I hate to say that this has been repeated over and over and over and over again. A friend of mine who's gone to be with the Lord several years ago, he grew up in the Orthodox Church. I think it was a Syrian Orthodox Church. He was from Lebanon. And he told me when he was a younger man and he was there at the church, and he had no real relationship with the Lord, just doing the religious thing. And he would say occasionally people would come into the church who were ethnically not part of that group. And he said he himself and others would just let them know they were not welcome. Let them know that this was not a place for them. This is just for this group of people. And it's that same kind of crazy spirit. It's the same kind of crazy spirit that would say in our history as a country and as Christians in our country that Africans were not allowed to be in the same congregation. You know, there's the Black Church in America. And the Black Church in America exists because white people did not want to worship with Black people. And so they kicked them out.
Let's join Pastor Brian in the studio as he shares about this month's resource from Back to Basics.
Hi, Pastor Brian here, and it is almost Christmas. And of course, this is a time of year when everybody is aware of this holiday. They're hearing Christmas music as they're out shopping, and yet not everyone knows what Christmas is truly all about. So we have a great offer for you for this month. It's a small book, and it's entitled, Is Christmas Unbelievable? It's written by Rebecca McLaughlin, who is an excellent writer and has so many good things to say here. Really a great little book to give to a friend, a neighbor, a family member at this time of the year. So I would encourage you to pick up your copy of Is Christmas Unbelievable by Rebecca McLaughlin.
Again, this month's resource is a book titled, Is Christmas Unbelievable? Four Questions Everyone Should Ask About the World's Most Famous Story by Rebecca McLaughlin. You can order the book, Is Christmas Unbelievable, by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of it, and then click on the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the book, Is Christmas Unbelievable? 4 questions everyone should ask about the world's most famous story by Rebecca McLaughlin to help equip you to defend the faith. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of Luke. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.